It's the Afternoon Jams on the phone line. We got a good sister from our hometown of Muskegon, Michigan, who decided to leave the luxury mansion home that she has. And I don't forget what state she's in, but she left there to go all the way to New York, Big Rob, to be on the front line as a nurse working in the ICU in New York City. We want to welcome to the phone line Stephanie Collier. How you doing today, Stephanie?
Hey, I'm doing well. I'm blessed. How are you all?
We're doing great. We're doing great. So what made you decide to go to New York and help out on this pandemic?
Well, I think that the fact that I'm a nurse, I've been a nurse, this is my 24th year, and I have always felt that nursing was more than just a career or an occupation for me. This is ministry. And so this was an opportunity that I had to come and to do what God has blessed my hands to do, and also to help out in a place where there's dire need. So that's what really curved my decision.
Now, Stephanie, how bad is it in New York? Is it what we see on the news, or is it worse, or what would you tell us how bad it is?
It's absolutely as bad as you see on the news. Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
I happen to be in the Boogie Down Bronx.
Boogie
and,
Down.
And as you all may...
I said the Boogie Down. I mean, yeah, the Boogie Down. Yes, yes.
So as you all may remember, the Bronx is a lower socioeconomic area. And so those people tend to not go to the doctor, and so when they do get sick, by the time they decide to seek treatment, a lot of times the condition has advanced to stages that, you know, may be very detrimental. And so that is that's what this area is full of, for lack of a better term. And so it is not uncommon at all for us to have two codes going at the same time.
Ooh.
In my unit.
Wow.
So this hospital has a regular ICU. However, I'm working in an area that used to be a PACU, and it's a makeshift ICU. And they're also converting the operating room, because all elective surgeries have been suspended. So the operating room is being transitioned into an ICU area, and they have construction workers on like the 16th, 17th floor, trying to create like 100 more beds. I see more body bags leaving out of just this hospital. You know, so imagine if you consider, you know, all of the other hospitals, Jacoby and Elmhurst and Harlem. You know what I mean? When you put that together as a whole, it's devastating.
Now, Stephanie, what hospital are you working at?
It's called North Central Bronx.
North Central Bronx. And you in the IC unit. Now, tell me the demographics of the people you're seeing.
Say it one more time.
The demographics of the people you're seeing. Are you seeing majority black, Puerto Rican?
Yes. It's all black people, whether or not they came from some of the Latin countries. But black people and Hispanic people. I cannot say that I have seen one Caucasian patient.
Oh, really?
One.
Oh, wow.
Zero.
Because of the Bronx?
Zero.
Because of the neighborhood? Because of the neighborhood, perhaps?
Yes. Because of the neighborhood, because of the location and the area, the encatchment area. This is what it consists of, is black people and Hispanic people who fall into that lower socioeconomic status that I was speaking about a moment ago. Yeah?
Now, Stephanie, are you seeing people recovered? Are people being healed?
Okay, so yesterday we transferred a patient out of here alive, and they went to the med-surg unit, and we all cheered and clapped and danced. And then today we had a patient to transfer to the med-surg area. I believe yesterday was the first day that I saw that.
Really?
Been here, and I Yeah. So people left here, but they weren't leaving alive.
Oh, my God.
And so it was a big, big, big deal.
Go ahead, Big Rob.
Can you tell us how are they recovering? Is it through the ventilators? If it's through medication? The two that you've seen so far.
Well, everybody who is in this unit is on a ventilator. The problem is that we have run out of ventilators, so we're using like these portable vents. But so the two people who left out, they were on a vent, and we began to wean them slowly off of the vent, and they responded positively, and so they were extubated, or meaning that the tube that was down their throats was taken out, and they did not respond in a haphazard way. And so once we were able to stabilize them, then they were transferred to the med-surg unit. Basically, you begin to try to, you start to wean down on the paralytics, because when you have a person on a ventilator, they really should be paralyzed. It's kind of, well, paralyzed and sedated. Okay, let me say that.
Okay.
I consider it cruel and unusual inhumane for a doctor to have a patient on a ventilator and not sedate them. Okay? Because
right.
As you can imagine, that's miserable. So we begin to wean down on the sedation, and we take them off of the paralytics and see if they're able to breathe over the vent and how many breaths they're taking on their own. Start to turn down the capacity of the breaths that we're giving them with the machine to see if their lungs are working or functioning on their own. And then those people are candidates to be extubated. And so that's what happened. The one guy who was transferred yesterday, actually, I had him about 2 weeks ago. And I took him down to CT. And the transport guys, they kept trying to run off, like, you know, moving so quickly. That's one thing about the people here. You know, everything is go, 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 move, move, move. And I kept telling them, you know, you guys got to wait for me. I need to be able to see the screen at all times, and they just kept running off. So when we got down to the CT area, they were trying to get him out of the bed and put him on the machine, and they snatched him and snatched his central line out of his jugular.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so we had blood gushing all over the room. We had to call a code. Anyway, long story short, that guy, I ended up finding out that he had a stroke.
Oh,
but
wow.
And so it really looked grim for him. But he was able to be extubated for the first few days. He seemed like he wasn't going to be able to. He seemed like he was awake, but nobody was home. If you understand
right.
what I mean,
you right.
know, we would be talking to him, and he was kind of dazed. But every day, he got better and better. And one day, he gave me a fist bump.
Okay. All right.
I walked over to him and I was saying, "Hey, look at you!" And he raised his hand and gave me a fist bump. So that's really the process of how people can leave out of here, but they got to be able to recover and breathe on their own. The secret to all that has been proning these people. So we put them on their bellies and leave them on their bellies for about 16 hours. And then for the other 8, we put them back in the supine position, and they have really responded to that. And then the other thing that we've done on a few patients is we've gotten plasma from people who have already recovered from the COVID, and we infuse that plasma to patients here. This is a trial.
It's a trial.
That part of it is a trial.
Okay.
Yeah. So
how about that? How about that medicine? How about that medicine? That hydroxychloroquine. Have y'all used that there?
Yes, we are. That's one of the medications that we're giving everybody as well every day.
Have you seen any kind of response from using that medicine?
Well, the thing is that everybody who's in the unit is getting that. So the people who have responded, I can't say because we're giving so many different treatments. I think it's a compilation of all of the treatment that's really helping.
Okay.
If you understand what
right.
I'm saying. So
right.
I can't really say that medication in and of itself.
It could be a bunch of
is
stuff.
A help.
Yeah. Okay. I get you. What kind of advice can you give to the community, people out there on the outside, and who maybe you're not, who not taking this thing serious? What can you say to them?
What I want to say to them is take this very seriously. This is not a joke. These people are leaving here. I'm telling you, I see body bags leaving out here every day. So I encourage people to wash your hands, keep your hands out of your mouth, away from any of your soft tissue, you know, inside your nostrils, inside your cheeks, your eyes, you know, those areas of injury. But, you know, those people who bite their fingernails, you need to stop it. The people who like to pick their faces and touch their faces and stuff like that. Just got to be more cognizant of those kinds of things when you are out in public and you carry a tissue or a napkin or something. So when you open a door, you don't have to use your hands to open the door. Mm. Just simple things like that can make a huge difference. Right. A lot of people are not shaking hands anymore. They're doing elbow bumps and you know, stuff like that. Instead of, because you don't know what the other person has done with their hands, and then you shake their hand, and then,
right,
you
right.
know, a lot of people don't wash hands before you eat. Please, please, please wash your hands at least
before they eat.
20 seconds. You gotta use friction. People think that it's the water that cleans or it's the soap that cleans. It's not. It's the friction that does the cleaning. So.
Wow. Wow. A lot of education. Tell me, how is it for you? Because you've been in a lot of, you've been in the military and you've been in the private mm-hmm. sector, public sector, and now you're here on ground zero for this, this pandemic. How is it for you emotionally? How do you stay, you know, how you keep your mind clear?
Well, I'll say when I first got here, it was really, really difficult for me. I think it probably took me about 2 weeks to kind of recondition my mind. And that's because I've been away from the bedside a number of years. I went into management, you know, and then when I decided to go back to school and pursue my doctorate, I started doing triage. And so the 12-hour shifts are long. They're not just 12-hour shifts. They're really 13 and a half hour shifts. So emotionally, you know, with what I was seeing every day and just walking through here looking at all these people, you know, on event, and it was a lot. But I have a village praying for me.
That's right.
And
that's right.
I have a prayer life myself. And, you know, it's my faith and my village that keeps me stable and grounded and encouraged. My cousin Tanita sends me encouragement every single morning. She'll send me, you know, a scripture, a meme, and hearts and kisses and stuff like that. Yolanda Hunter sends me a lot of text messages. So people who, just the people at home who remind me that, you know, that I'm loved and
exactly.
that I'm strong and that I can do this. That's what keeps me going.
Wow. You're a lot stronger than me. I'm telling you, I commend you for the sacrifice that you're making.
Thank you.
Last thing, before we go, when should we go to the emergency room? We hear about folks going to the emergency room, being turned away from saying, oh, this is not an emergency. Of course, we are lost folks to this thing, so we want to take the precautions. Mm-hmm. When do you think we should go to the emergency room?
You should go to the emergency room if you have a fever, a fever that you cannot get down. You know, after a day, if you've taken acetaminophen or Tylenol, which is a brand name, or if you've taken Motrin or ibuprofen, and you can't get the fever to break, that's a reason to go to the emergency room. If you are vomiting or you have diarrhea and you are depleting your body of its fluids, that is a reason to go to the emergency room. So those are really the reasons. It's the fever, the high fever. I'm not talking about 99.2, but if you got a fever 101, 102, and you can't keep any food down and your pooping is coming out of both ends, you need to go to the emergency room.
Right.
If you have a little cough, that's not a reason to go to the emergency room. Also, body aches is a big thing, and severe headaches, But I'm not talking about a regular, you know, headache that we deal with. But these are like headaches people say that they are beyond real.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. Wow. So they, what I haven't had one, praise be to God, but from what I understand, these headaches make you feel like you are, feel like you want to die is what was explained to me by one of the respiratory therapists who came back to work the other day. She had COVID. She was off for 3 weeks. She told me that her head was hurting so badly and she had pain in her lower back that felt like she was being stabbed and she was praying to God to take her.
Mm, wow. Wow. Rob, do you got a question? Yeah. You got a question for Stephanie before we go?
No, I think we covered it all. Yeah, that's great information.
And so proud of you. I mean, just to do this. I mean, who does that? I mean, this, it really takes someone who really care about humanity, that's willing to sacrifice.
Thank you.
Because you're at risk. You know, you just got a mask. That's it. Them people in China.
Oh, yeah.
When I was looking at China and look at the people over there working, they had on like space suits working. You know, like they going to space with. I just see y'all with masks on. That's it.
Yeah. Well, we do that when we get here. I have a lot of gear on. I got stuff on my head. I got on three different masks. I have a face shield. I have on an extra pair of scrubs and a gown and foot cover. So it's the same here.
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah. How long are you going to be there? How long are you going to be in New York?
I don't know. As long as they need me.
Wow. That's love. That's love. Be safe. We're proud of you. It's an honor to know you.
Thank you so much.
And you and
thank you so much.
Yeah. And you in our prayers, too. You in our prayers. Definitely in our prayers.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Take
thank you so much. Thank you all.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, sweetie. Take care, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. There you go, family. Stephanie Causier. A little disclosure to our friends that are listening to us in Benton Harbor. And Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and Greensville, South Carolina, that's listening to us in Orlando, Florida, listening to us in Muskegon, our hometown of Muskegon, Michigan. We know Stephanie, and she volunteered to go with us to Africa when we took the kids, the very first trip. And she volunteered to help put a clinic in the village. And so she's always been a person willing to go the extra mile. And man, bro, nothing but love and respect there, bro.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Ain't enough money for me, you know. But I guess you got to be cut for that. And we all cut for certain things
from a different cloth.
Yeah, from a different cloth. You know, everybody got a role to play. But man, they on the front line. And I salute all of them and people like Stephanie Causier. Going back to more music.